العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم وعلى آله وصحبه ومن استنى بسنة إلى يوم الدين. All praise be to Allah, may Allah's peace and blessings be on the Prophet Muhammad وسلم, and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. The basic topic of today's khutbah concerns the marriage practices here in Saudi Arabia. And as we said before, that the purpose of the khutbah is to inform the people in the area in which the khutbah is being given, you know, of some aspects of the religion which they may be neglecting. And as such, the Imam, you know, has looked into one of the areas in which there is some deviation in the society with regard to the Sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he has given suggestions based on the Sunnah to try to clarify this for the people. You know, the week before he had looked at problems in terms of people getting married, but this week he is now discussing the actual process of marriage, when marriage does take place here. And what he pointed out, you know, what he laid a lot of stress on, was the wastage, you know, whether it be of money or of food, which generally takes place in marriages held here. And of course he quoted, you know, from the Quran, where Allah says, إِنَّ الْمُبَذِّرِينَ كَانُوا إِخْوَانَ الشَّيَاطِينَ, so that verily those who are wasteful are of the brethren of the devil. You know, it's something which is forbidden in Islam. And this is essentially because, from an Islamic perspective, whatever we have by way of wealth or food, it is not a result of our own efforts. It is blessing from Allah. Wealth, property, etc., is not looked at from an Islamic perspective as being the individual's right to do with as he pleases. It is something which Allah has given as a test for the individual to see how he handles it. Because the wealth which is available in the society is given unevenly. Some people are given more than others. And this difference is what produces a situation of test. Because if we all receive the same, if Allah gave us all the same, then there would be no challenge for the individual. Should I share some of my wealth with others or should I not? Or should I try to take some of the wealth of others or should I not? Right? Those challenges, you know, which are evil, both of these, the one is good in the sense of sharing, but the desire not to share is an evil desire. The desire to take the wealth of others is evil, but not taking the wealth of others is good. I mean, this situation can only take place where there is an uneven distribution of wealth. And of course, on the basis of that, the basic concepts involved in, you know, communist theory, you know, wherein they want to make the society all on one level, making everybody equal, is totally rejected from the Islamic point of view. You know, democracy in an Islamic perspective doesn't mean, you know, having everybody having the same, you know, as everybody else. And such a situation is not only impractical, but it is also impossible. Because in these societies where they've tried to make this kind of equal distribution, they have failed. Because it removes incentive from people. Man is such that it is his nature to want to gain more. And he strives to gain more for himself. And if his striving to gain more are not rewarded, then that destroys the desire on his part to strive. I mean, he will just do what is the minimum. And as such, those countries where they try to introduce, you know, this type of a system, their whole, you know, productive level and all that, even though they had more resources, more people, etc., remain lower than, you know, other societies, Western-oriented societies, where the capitalist system, you know, encourages individual incentives, provides individual incentives. I'm not saying that, you know, Islam supports the capitalist system either, from the point of view that the capitalist system tends to go overboard now in the rights of the individual. But there's certain aspects, the idea of the individual having the right to own the product of his work, this is his right. Islam recognizes the right. But where the individual's right now goes to the point where it's at the expense of the rest of the society, Islam rejects that and says the needs of the society as a whole have also to be given, you know, primary consideration. So Islam, really the system finds a balance between the two. But the essential concept, and I'd just like to stress this, the essential concept in Islam is that wealth is not the primary property of the individual. It is a test that is given by Allah to the individual as a trust, for which he will be asked about on the Day of Judgment. How did he use that trust? Everything that we as an individual have, whether it's strength, physical strength, you know, or health, all these different things are blessings which Allah has given us in trust. This is why we talked about the idea of, for example, smoking being haram because it destroys the body. And, you know, we are not allowed to destroy ourselves physically. We have a duty to protect ourselves. We will be asked about our bodies on the Day of Judgment. If we are destroying ourselves, we're killed. That's why Prophet ﷺ has said, whoever kills himself will find himself in the hellfire, killing himself over and over again. However he killed himself in this life, it was with a cigarette, slowly killing himself. He finds himself in the hellfire, killing himself with a cigarette over and over again, perpetually. So, from an Islamic perspective, the body, the wealth the individual has, the strength he has, you know, whatever he has around him is a trust which is given to him by Allah, which he will have to answer for. And that is given to him, we said, unevenly. Some people are given more than others, so that he is actually tested with it. Because without that uneven distribution, there will be no test. So, once it is looked at as a trust, and once it is the basic principle, then to squander it is forbidden. You will be asked about it on the Day of Judgment, whether you squander your wealth, however you squander your wealth. If you squander it, for example, I mean, from the point of view again of smoking, because a person, when he smokes a cigarette, he smokes a pack of cigarettes a day, you add that up in a year, what the cost is, and you roll that up, whether it's 2,000 or 3,000 riyals. If you saw somebody rolling up 3,000 riyals and was setting it on fire, you would think this person an idiot and grab that money away from him. So this person has no right to handling this money. But in effect, this is what the person who smokes is doing. He's taking 2,000 or 3,000 riyals and burning it up, inhaling it into his lungs. Because it's of no benefit to him, it is just squandering. This is squandering of the wealth. So this is why, even from a point of view of squandering cigarettes, smoking cigarettes is haram. Similarly, in all the other aspects in the human life, you know, squandering is haram. This is why, even in our eating habits, for example, I mean, we should try as much as possible that the things we put into our bodies are things which are beneficial to us. You know, although, you know, Western society, you know, has built up a system wherein artificial products are given precedence over natural products, right? And it's promoted with such vigor that the average child, you know, if you're giving him the choice between a lollipop and an apple, he'll take a lollipop. I mean, even though the apple is much better for him, I mean, it's natural, it's good tasting and everything, but he will choose that lollipop over the apple. Because from the time that he's very young, that whole system of getting him used to the sweetie, these artificial flavors and so are introduced from a very early stage, so he becomes addicted to these various artificial products, you know, which are in the society, which in fact, you know, destroys teeth and, you know, all the other things that come with it. And we as adults, we have to look into our own habits to look to see what we're eating. I mean, are the things we're eating really beneficial to us, or is it just junk? I mean, really, if you have a choice between apple juice and Coca-Cola, I mean, although normally you say, it's your own individual thing, you know, if you want to drink Coca-Cola, you want to drink... You analyze, what is in Coca-Cola? So what is the degree of benefit involved in it? Okay? And then you judge for yourself. Is it really, I mean, I mean, to the degree that it is consumed. It's not to say, you know, a person may not take any Coca-Cola, but, you know, I'm not saying, I'm just giving this as a suggestion in terms of really looking, because when we're talking about principles, it's not enough for us to just talk about them on a theoretical plane, you know, in general wastage and so forth. We have to also put it down into practice in our daily life. We have to look within our own daily lives to see how can these principles be applied. And as such, you know, it does become essential for us to look and analyze in terms of our daily habits where there is wastage. Where the wastage goes to the point where it is criminal, we have to try to call it away and find that middle path wherein we're truly appreciating the blessings which Allah has given us, you know, in the creation, and we're utilizing these things to benefit ourselves. So, as you said, the principle of wastage in Islam is forbidden. And the marriage customs here, when one looks at the marriage customs in terms of the whole process of the marriage, wherein expensive they have these special wedding palaces, you know, where they rent huge amounts of money spent in renting, and there's huge amounts of money prepared in food, you know, and when the thing is over, right, for the most part, most of that food is just dumped right in the garbage. And a huge amount of food are just dumped right in the garbage. I mean, this is haram, without a doubt. Because whenever, you see, the whole of the earth is really one interrelated system. You may not realize it, but when you throw good food in the garbage, and there is somebody starving to death in Somalia, or Bangladesh, or, you know, some place around the world, you are indirectly responsible for that person's starvation. Because that shortage and that wastage, they're interrelated. I mean, you may not see the direct connection because you're not taking the food off its plate, you know, eating what you feel of it and throwing it in the garbage, so it doesn't seem to you to be, you know, a direct relationship, right? But in fact, what is wastage, like for example in America, to keep the price of chicken, you know, at a level where the farmers, those involved in the distributors and so forth are making the kind of profits that they want to realize, which they feel has to increase every year at a particular percentage, and if it's not increasing, they're losing, right? For them to keep that system going, it means that every year, you know, millions of chickens, baby chickens, are killed. They'll just kill them so that the quantity of chickens on the market will not be so great that it will force the prices down. This is why you found in times, for example, even in the times of the Depression, when people, you know, were out on the streets, food was scarce in America in the 20s. At the same time, they were dumping potatoes in the Atlantic Ocean to keep the cost of potatoes high. The natural resources of the countries, of the third world countries that are taken into America, reproduced, you know, redesigned and sold back to these people, you know, this is a cycle. This is a cycle which is taking place, you know, constantly. Raw resources are taken, manufactured products are produced, and they're sold back to the people in Saramah. So when these raw resources are destroyed, quantities of it are destroyed in order to keep the price of the manufacturing products high, then it is really the wealth of these people that is being destroyed. So, the idea of wastage of food in this fashion, it is criminal. Islamic food is criminal. So, the Imam was pointing out that in the wedding which take place here, that wastage of the food, throwing away the food is haram. If food is made for a gathering, and there's not enough food, I mean there's too much food at the end, then that food should either be taken to poorer sections of the city or the town and given to the poor people, or those people that are there should take some of the food home with them and eat it. See, but of course, I mean, this society, and often society tends to look at that, you know, look down at that. So it's for the guest, for the host, to when you're leaving the office, can you take some of this food with you? And it's looking, who's going to take this food? Because taking the food implies that you need the food, and you know, because people are looking at it in this negative fashion. But if people are looking at it from an Islamic perspective, in the sense that, you know, we should not waste, then not only should the guest, you know, try to help the host, but the host should feel it is Islamic responsibility to see that that food is used. Whether he freezes it and eats it, you know, the idea again in the society of eating leftovers, you know, it's considered looked down on, but no, actually, from a science perspective, I mean, it is a requirement. It's a requirement, and we should not feel any kind of negative attitude towards eating leftovers. So, even going beyond the situation of marriage, I mean, you'll know, those of you who have been invited to eat, you know, at various Saudi brothers' places, you'll find in general, I mean, if you're invited, maybe only 3 or 4 people are invited, but the brother feels that he must prepare a meal for 20. So you come and you sit down and there's so much food. Way more. I mean, he feels he has to do this. Custom has now put it on him that he must prepare. It's not enough for him to prepare, enough a place for you to eat, a place for some of the people that are involved. This is considered, you know, like, you don't have, the person doesn't have the freedom to pick and choose, you know, anything you like. Sure. But Islamically speaking, unless there's no harm in preparing more, as long as that added food is utilized. But in most cases, that added food is thrown in the garbage afterwards. So the Imam talked about this, you know, because of the fact that it is so widespread in this society, you know, a major source of wastage. He also talked about, you know, certain other things which take place, commonly take place in the weddings, which involve photography, where they will bring in, you know, photographers who will take pictures, you know, of the people involved in the wedding. And of course these pictures are developed, and as he already pointed out, he said, you know, like, the people who develop the pictures then look through the pictures and look to see, you know, those who are pretty, they'll praise those that are pretty, and those that are ugly, they'll curse them. You know, and he says, you know, I mean, who of you, you know, would like for some person who is not related to you to be looking at a picture of your wife who you're just married, or, you know, your mother or your sister, and say, wow, look at this ugly so-and-so, look at this, oh, what a pretty one, you know, look at, you know, in this fashion toward your family, right? I mean, that's the way we should look at the, you know, you should look at this thing of people taking photographs and developing them like this, right? So he was saying that the individual should have some, you know, consciousness of what are the results of this practice that he's doing. You know, and of course he pointed out, you know, the various hadith where the Prophet had said, for example, إِنَّا أَشَدَّ النَّاسِ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ الْمُصَوِّرُونَ عَذَابًا يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ الْمُصَوِّرُونَ, those who receive the greatest, you know, punishment on the day of judgment, you know, are the people who make pictures, right? And he mentioned a number of other, you know, hadith in this respect. But of course, you know, he did point out that in the case of photography, there is some difference in opinion, although a number of scholars may hold that photography is included in the general category of picture making. Some scholars also hold that it is not. That picture making, you know, involves the creation of statues and painting. People who like paint portraits and things, so will be included in this. Because the fact that the process by which the picture is captured is a natural process, which doesn't involve the hand of the individual directly, in the sense of him trying to reproduce what Allah has created from his own activity. That the process in photography is similar to the process involved in, you know, a mirror image, a mirror catching an image, etc., etc. So there are some differences of opinion in this area. But the point still remains, you know, that the taking of pictures wherein one exposes family members usually in a state of undress which is not allowed for a person who is not related to the family to look at, I mean, this is a normal practice. Because people in the wedding parties, you know, the women, etc., they are not going to be, you know, covering themselves as they should cover themselves in the presence of, what do you call, people who can marry them, right? They call nabi, they call them who are not, you know, they call them ajnabi, but who are not from the mahram, those people who could marry them. So one should be very careful in this area. The other thing that he pointed out was another practice, like which was that of including musicians. You know, common practice here also, they will bring musicians, male or female musicians. Commonly female musicians are brought, and they play music, and the women get up and dance and stuff like that. Now, it is true that from an Islamic perspective, the Prophet ﷺ, you know, in the case of weddings, you know, had given the okay for young girls to beat the dust, which is a kind of a drum, and sing, that this is allowable. But that this allowance, you know, what is being done today goes far beyond that. It goes into another area where they're including all the other wind and stringed instruments, which the Prophet ﷺ, you know, had informed us was haram in hadith in Sahih Bukhari, in which, you know, he had said that one of the signs of the Day of Judgment was that people would make halal wind and stringed instruments. So this type of music, the music produced by the wind and stringed instruments, this is commonly what is used in these parties. And wind and stringed instruments. So this is a commonly used instrument.